Hey, Mr. Miles, it's Marina, it's Sierra, podcast one, chapter one.
All right, so chapter one basically summarizes how statistics is probability and how it's not exact. So as we went further in the book, we saw how a lot of the work that we did kind of coordinated with what the book said, because usually when we do things in our totals, say about, they're not really precise because they're about a number. They range from the number, the previous number, and the number that comes after, or the whole numbers. So, chapter two.
Well, I felt like this whole book as I was reading. Well, I only read four chapters so far.
Same whole book?
Yeah, not the whole book. But I felt like it was bashing, like, statistics. You didn't feel like that, Mr. Miles? I know you did. And these pictures? Mm-mm. Are they promoting smoking?
I think that they're promoting smoking. Maybe because, like, a lot of people... a lot of people smoke, and then even when they have problems when they shouldn't be smoking, they smoke, and that has to do with health issues. And so, I mean, somebody can be surveyed for health issues, and since that survey is not going to be precise, because not everybody's saying the truth about if they smoke or not, then that's not good for people who want to know information about that.
Or I just think the author was like a smoker. I don't want everybody to smoke.
I think that the book doesn't bash probability. It's just giving you, or statistics, it's just giving you a way to use it to your advantage, which is why the book is called, you know, what it's called.
How to Lie with Statistics. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, chapter four, it talks about a lot of IQ tests. And basically, an IQ test is a statistical error, as in, it doesn't really account for leadership or creativity. It just counts for intelligence. So, a person has leadership, they have creativity and intelligence. Maybe their intelligence is not as great as their creativity or leadership, but, like, other people might be known as smarter than that, certain than them, because of their test results, but it's also a statistical error. And I also talked about the median, and I don't think that the median should be used for everything, because it can be a number, like, it can be a couple numbers, like 1, 1, 1, 100, and the median is a great number, but it doesn't, is nowhere near the number one. So, I mean, it can be like, okay.
Yeah. Speaking of which, that also comes up a lot in chapter two, where they're talking about how they, I think it was about houses, the average of houses or house costing or people's incomes in that neighborhood. And they were saying, like, an average can be, if it's not saying an arithmetic average, then you could also be talking about the mode or the median or the mean. So, 1 year, I think it was like the income was $35,000, and the next year was $1,500, and that was all based off of, $15,000, and that was based off of different ways that they took the average. So, like, maybe the 1 year they took the mean, and then the next year they took the mode, which is, like, because less, they were saying that more people in the neighborhood had an income of $10,000. So, since there was more of them, the average, quote-unquote, would be $10,000. But then if there's like the median, then the median could have been like $35,000, which is they got first time.
It's like when you watch some TV and they talk about like, oh, on average, this happened. But like, nobody's still going to sit there and check it. Like, they're just going to be like, oh, that's a good number. Like, we don't know what the company did to get that number. That's kind of crazy.
Also, we don't know people's real, like, how much they get a year, their yearly salary, because a lot of people get embarrassed of how much they earn, and they don't want to seem poor or lower class than somebody else that, like, say, for example, they used to go to school with. So that somebody that you went to school with can be your boss, and they can know your wage and stuff like that. But if you're, like, working, if you have, like, a reunion, and then you talk about your job, you're obviously going to say that you earned more. And they talk about that in
chapter one,
how people from Yale, it's a very prestigious school, but a lot of people, like, they don't have good jobs after that. So they don't want to be embarrassed. Like, they went to an Ivy League school, and they end up with a really bad-paying job. And so they have to lie about that in surveys, and that kind of, like, creates conflict, because nobody's really going to know how much like the neighborhood, how much money the neighborhood has as a whole.
And they also talked about how some people that also graduated from Yale, how they lie about their average to be modest, like they lie about their average to be modest, basically saying that they don't want to seem like they make too much money because of taxes and stuff.
Right.
So they say that they make less money than they do, and they have people that say they make more money than they do, so therefore you're not really getting a real average.
But that makes me angry. If I'm buying a product, I want the real thing. I want to know what people thought. I don't want them lying about their taxes. I don't want them lying about the money they get every month. Why can't they be honest?
They can't be honest because it has to do all with money. Like, no rich person wants to pay a lot of money for taxes, and no poor person wants to know that anybody else knows that they're poor because they don't want them to know that they struggle or they go through certain needs that the other person doesn't go through. So that's probably why they lie about their service.
Mm-mm.
I feel as if it was like a closer, like, nobody would know that you were, like, what do you call those surveys? Anonymous surveys, probably. Yeah, you could just actually tell the truth, and they should just have that in each community to actually have a better like estimate of the real yearly salary and stuff like that.
But then I feel like the online one, you ever see that commercial for the Big Spot commercial? They were like, if you don't like this product, come on here and make some money and then do surveys to say you don't like that product. I feel like people be like still are lying on there too, like just to get money. Like they're gonna click through everything fast. So you ever do a survey and you just wanna get it over with, so you just click anything? Like,
yeah, it's true.
So I feel like online surveys are real, like, not a good idea. But
they should promote
going.
It as it benefiting their community.
I mean, they get paid for it, but, like, people just want to, like, be quick. It's not going to be... Oh, they were talking about that a little bit in chapter 1.
Surveys also...
I forgot. But,
I thought.
But, yeah, so surveys, they're back to the whole about thing, the probability thing with statistics. That's what surveys are. They're just an about everything in statistics. Well, my personal opinion is that it's just almost. It's like the word almost. Like, it's not a yes or a no. It's in the gray area, almost. So, yeah. I don't know if you're talking about surveys.
Oh, I was reading, like, I remember they were talking about, like, how the pennies, like, if you do so many trials that, like, it's going to be on heads 80% of the time. So, like, how many trials is good enough to prove that? So I was, like, thinking about, like, you know, when we do our little experiments in class, like, we just pick, like, a high number. Like, we talk about trials, like, we say, all right, we want to do 30. But, like, how do we know that is enough to prove our data? Like, what is enough?
In chapter 4, it talks about, like, how they give an example about corn and, like, the field and how much corn there was in the field and stuff like that. And they don't have an exact number because they can't experiment with every corn. So it's basically the more data you gather is going to be the better data you're going to have at the end, the better amount. So the more data is always best.
Which has a lot to do with the sample. When you talk about surveys, I was thinking about the different samples. So, like, remember how earlier in the year in class we learned about, like, what kind of sample you want? So, like, if you're trying to get a sample of, like, say, two high school students like to do homework. And it's like you go to a freshman class and you only ask all freshmen if they like to do homework, or all seniors during their fourth quarter, do they like to do homework? You're going to get a different answer than if you were to just ask freshmen. So I feel like when you do samples, in order to know that you have a good sample, I feel like you need to have a little bit of everything. So, like, maybe like a couple kids from each advisory, something like that. But your sample has also a lot to do with bias. Like, if you were to ask a basketball team, if you go to SLA basketball team and ask them how they feel about sports, clearly everybody on the basketball team is going to say they like it.
Ball is lying around.
Right. So, you need to get a good range of people, or a good range of what you're trying to show.
I know they were talking about a little bit, I don't know what chapter was, but they were talking about, like, how knowing a little bit of information about a topic before you do it is better than just going in knowing everything. I wrote the quote down. It says, knowing nothing about a subject is frequently healthier than knowing what is not so, and a little learning may be a dangerous thing. Like, what are you guys thinking about? Think about that.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
The quote?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the quote?
Knowing nothing about a subject is frequently healthier than knowing what is not so, and a little learning may be a dangerous thing.
I just think that the whole, it's just about statistics again, like, it's just, it's better, they're being, like, using the statistics as an example would be, like, saying that not knowing statistics is better than knowing how false it is, in my opinion. That's how I word it and how I put it out there, how, because not everything is exact, so it's false, it's not an exact number, it's not an exact data, it's false, so that's probably what they mean, like, by, I'd rather not know something false than know that it is false.
Here's how I feel about your quote.
So, remember when we first did that penny experiment, and we actually, like, sat there and did, like, 100 trials, like, 200 trials to try to figure out the ratio of heads to tails, or how many tails you would get, and how many heads you would get? But once we already knew that information, there was no more need for us to keep doing it.
Yeah, we already
so
knew
a lot of the time, I've heard of various cases where people would just come up with numbers close to 50 if they were flipping a coin 100 times because they already know that half is going to be tails, half is going to be heads, but nobody feels like flipping a coin that many times, so since they already know what the statistical, since they already know what the probability is, they just come up with numbers, so they'll say, like, 47 heads and 53 tails instead of actually going out and doing it, which can mess up data later
on. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Might as well be like, no, actually do it. Like, don't make up data, because we know we would in that case, because we know heads is going to come up more than tails.
That's why I feel like
see,
sometimes...
See, look, I listen to you, Mr. Miles.
That's how come I feel that sometimes doing knowing statistics can be dangerous when doing...
experiments.
Right.
Bye, Mr. Miles. All right, well, we're done now. Hope you enjoyed our almost 12 to 13 minutes. About 13 minutes. Get it? Probably that. So, see you
later. Podcast 2, Marina, Sierra, Priscilla. Hi, Mr. Miles.
So, in our last podcast, you asked us to pick one of the quotes and in the front cover and ask us how it related to the book. So I picked, we picked the one that says there are three kinds of lies: lies, damned lies, and statistics. And I think that relates to the book because the whole book basically is telling you like different ways how people lie with statistics or try to trick people using statistics.
They manipulate them.
Yeah.
Oh, like, and also they manipulate people to, like, buy their product and, like, an advertisement and stuff like that. That's a big topic we talked about in our last discussion. So the second thing you asked us to do was to put the second paragraph on page 18 into our own words. So.
All right, so the second paragraph reads, "A river cannot, we are told, rise above its source. Well, it can seem to if there is a pumping station concealed somewhere about. It is equally true that the result of a sampling study is no better than the sample it is based on. By the time the data have been filtered through layers of statistical manipulation and reduced to decimal point average, the result begins to take on an aura of conviction that a closer look at the sampling would deny." So that basically means that the information we have is pretty much not good enough because the first sentence says, "A river cannot, we are told, rise above its source." The source... there's not really a story, so it's not really anything that we can have a complete answer because statistics is all about, or almost. So even though we try to rise above, like, the data we receive or the results we receive or the tool and stuff like that, there's no such thing as it being true or it being, like, giving us real knowledge of what we're supposed to know.
So for the third thing you asked us to do, you told us to comment on the last paragraph of chapter 1.
So it reads, "Actually, as we have seen, it is not necessary that a poll be rigged, that is, that the results be deliberately twisted in order to create a false impression. The tendency of the sample to be biased in this consistent direction can rig it automatically." So basically what we took from that was that there's no reason to rig a poll because the information that they give off can be biased in a way that the votes are already rigged. So, like, for example, when you think of, like, votes and, like, polls and elections, you think of, like, the different commercials and how they're all biased towards the other person. So they'll be like, what's an example of one? They can be example.
They be like, vote for Mitt Romney because Obama doesn't believe in this, that, and that, and he's gonna.
Yeah, they'd be like,
whatever.
If you care about your family,
that's what I mean.
Then vote for Barack Obama, and then you're gonna be like, well, I care about my family,
so and let's vote for Obama,
right?
And then they make Mitt Romney seem like he's this bad person. Well, they make both of the candidates like each other make.
That's the point. That's what they're saying. So if you follow like a certain party, or like you only watch certain webs, I mean, only if you don't get yourself aware with everything. And you only listen to, like, one side of the story, you're going to automatically bias that information that they're telling it to you, because they're never going to tell it to you in a way that makes the other person sound good, but they're not necessarily lying to you either. They're just saying it in a biased way. Therefore, they're, quote-unquote, rigging the polls, well, rigging the votes, without actually having to go in and tamper with what's going on.
Well, they do that in the media anyway, because, like, social media, like, all the newscasts, they're, like, liberalists, so... Of course, they're not going to talk about the other candidates. If you think about it, an election is way more candidates than just Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. But yeah. They don't talk about all the other person, like the conservatives.
That's why you need to... Well, no, you're right. But, like, also, there's some news stations and stuff that are, like, biased towards Democrats, like, biased towards Republicans, yeah. Which is why you should always, if you're into that kind of stuff, you should always watch, like, don't just watch, stick to one network, like, switch back and forth.
Right. And you can always go online and research as yeah. well, because they only show you, like, the most powerful or the people that they think is the most powerful as leaders so far. They don't really talk about other people that can be better than the ones who look the most powerful.
Like,
so
Fox 29, Channel 6, and all that. They only talk about, like, the Democrats and the Republicans. They don't talk about the other parties. So when people vote and they're only thinking about the Democrats and Republicans, they don't think about the other parties that they can be. Like, you don't have to just be a Democrat or a Republican. And people don't know that because of the media. They just make it seem like those two are the only choices that you can choose.
Right.
So, the fourth thing you asked it to do was to select one sentence in chapter 4 that you believe best summarizes the main points of this chapter. As a group, we said that the best sentence that describes this chapter is, just to clear the air, let's note, first of all, that whatever an intelligence test measures is not quite the same thing as we usually mean by intelligence. It neglects such important things as leadership and creative imagination. That's two sentences, but we felt as though they best describe the whole chapter.
Although it's two sentences, they go hand in hand. You wouldn't be able to know what the first sentence was or the second sentence was if you had to read them together.
Right, Mr. Miles.
And that basically explains that chapter 4 had to do with, like, not... Like, the data not being exactly precise because of the fact that only the intelligence was being measured, not the power they have to be a leader or, like, their imagination, like, what they can create without intelligence or without full intelligence.
So, basically,
I don't even think you can measure.
The
IQ
test is, like, not...
effective.
Right.
Didn't we do something like that in Bear class?
I was about to say, we did something.
It was like an article about like how you can't measure
how
intelligence.
Smart someone is.
Yeah, it could be based off their environment and stuff like that.
Yeah, their environment, who they hang around with, I guess because of their environment
and
the
things.
Oh, their family status, their family income, because they were talking about like how rich people can buy their kids like SAT prep and stuff like that. That's how they can get into the best colleges
like
and get full rides.
Schools. Like how people. How schools in the suburbs are considered to be, like, better, quote-unquote, than schools in the city, which is kind of true.
Yeah.
All because, like, I guess don't they pay more taxes in the suburbs? And that's where all their money...
Yeah, they also get more money funded to the school. Like, we don't get as much money as, like, Strathaven does or anything
yeah.
like
right.
that.
Right, so
why
we don't... So, basically, we, as public school students in Philadelphia, do not have the same opportunities as a child that goes to school in the suburbs. Therefore, they might score higher on an IQ test, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're more intelligent than I am.
For example, if you compare Usley to Masterman is known for its intelligence and their good scores, and they're 100% of kids going to college after graduation. But I feel as though that in SLA, we do have a very high percentage ourselves, not as great as Matsurin, but it's like in the high 90s. And even though we don't all exactly go to college right after graduation, I think we still leave with a sense of creativity and like the five core values that SLA presents, which would be like research and inquiry, collaboration,
reflection,
presentation. So it seems like that pretty much covers all, like being able to create your own, like create something from your own imagination, and that'll lead to leadership. So that's something else that quote meant.
Basically, we're more prepared for the world than the kids at Massaman, in a long story short.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it was smart.
I feel like we're more prepared for a lot of like
real life.
Yeah, like real life scenarios. Like we understand that school is more, or education is more than just a test and a book.
Yeah.
And it's more about how you can apply it to life, which is why like benchmarks, even though they're very annoying.
Okay.
Right.
Not this one though, Mr. Miles.
Afterwards, you can see like how you just took a whole like math concept or English concept and applied it to something that maybe didn't directly correlate with math, but we made it directly correlate with math, or didn't directly correlate with history, or like you have to actually know what you're talking about to do a project on something, opposed to taking a test where you just memorize it and then just forget about it that same day.
Yeah, you're not really learning anything. Well, you are learning something because you're memorizing it, but still not going to be able to know how to apply it.
Yeah, I feel like you retain something better if you apply it than you would if you were to take a test on it.
I feel like you remember it more in the long run. Like, 50 years from now, you're not going to remember those vocabulary words. The SAT words.
Only if you read a lot, you know, but that's on your own time. So,
you're not going to remember the brain, all the parts of the brain.
I might have to, because, you know.
Well, if you're in the medical field, then yeah, I'm not. You are? No? Okay.
But I'm saying, like, say when we took, like, when we learned about the brain, we did their paper on it, the worksheet.
Yeah.
But it was like, it wasn't as easy to remember it as it was when we were doing that clay model of the brain. Like,
oh, yeah.
When you start applying stuff or like putting things with pictures or stuff like that, it's easier to remember it. But we're a little off topic. Let's stop back on track.
All right, so.
Sorry, Tim. Like we said earlier, when we were talking about the Democrats and the Republicans and like how people view them on TV, it also connects to like chapter 5 and chapter 6, because they talked about how your graph can make your results look better. And in the images, they had like the short guy, and that meant the data was like, or the line was short. And then they had the long face guy in the data. They just changed the numbers around and it made it look like the trend was better. So I think it's all about the perception, and that's how people like buy products, because if they seen the other one with the short guy and the trend, it didn't look that well. That didn't make sense, but
I get it.
And then if they had the other one, like see the picture, and they had the other guy and the trend looks better.
That she is referring to starts on page 63 and goes up to page 65, in case you want to follow along.
Right, Mr. Miles. Oh no, it's 62 and 63 with the guy. But just all they did was in the picture, they just changed the decimal. Like they made decimal points and they went up by 2. And then on the other one, they went up like, they went up a whole number 2. Like, so it was like 18, 20, 22, 24. And then the other one, it was like 20.2.
So basically breaking the data up into smaller intervals to make it look like more of a significant change, when it really isn't a change at all. It's more like a straight line, but since they made it look like there's a change because they stretched it out into a smaller interval, that's basically that is doing better than what it is and making more of an impact than what it is, opposed to showing them that it really didn't make no change at all, is what you're saying.
Yeah, we did a homework assignment like that too. It was like, get a newspaper. Remember that homework assignment? It was like, get a newspaper.
I mean, I do this in math all the time. Like, when you want to show, like, when you're graphing something and you want to show, like, a significant change or, like, a rate or something like that, instead of, like, going up. Like, say if the numbers were going from, like, 1 to 4, instead of me going up by, like, just 1s, I might go from, like, do it by 0.2, which does show, like, makes it look like a more drastic change than it would if I was to go up by 1s. So that's something I do a lot, but I didn't really think of, like, how you can trick people with that.
Like, Like, yeah, it's like, say if you put this on TV, like, I doubt they're going to sit there and show the numbers, or I doubt people are going to sit there and look and be like, oh my God, it went up 0.2 points.
Yeah. Right, they're just going to be like, whoa, it made such a dramatic drop or such a dramatic increase when really it's the same.
And then they might show the other company and be like, oh, look, it really didn't change at all. And put,
which technically isn't lying.
It's not lying, it's so, just not being completely honest. How to lie with statistics.
See, but they don't have a problem with that, because this book is called How to Lie with Statistics, but technically, nowhere in here are they lying. They're just tricking people. It's like a whole lot of,
it's like a mind
of wordplay. Like, a lot of people can get away with things that they say, like, phrasing things in a way that it comes out deceiving, but it's not necessarily a lie.
You want to talk about that in your book review?
Maybe.
Good topic.
Because even though it's a little off topic, the other day I was watching Scandal. I don't know if you guys watch Scandal. And the guy was like, he didn't kill his wife. No, yeah, he didn't kill his wife because she was her his best friend, I swear. But like, he never said that that he loved her, because really he loved the man. And like, she, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he never said he loved his wife. But,
okay. But he wouldn't kill her because of the fact that he has some type of affection towards her.
Right, like the way he played out his words. Like, they had to pick apart his wordplay. Like, he was just like, I would hurt my wife. She's my best friend. But he never said, like, he loved her. And, like, he was in love with her. So that's,
yeah, like, half lies and half truths. And
that, but it was all true, though. Like,
he didn't say that he did not love her.
That was a lie.
But he didn't say what was expected.
Like, say if, like, you turned in all your homework or something, but you turned in, like, all of them late. You just be like, I turned in every single assignment, but you didn't say you turned in every single assignment in late, like stuff like that. Like, just knowing how to phrase things that they come out as deceiving,
you gotta be
but
smooth.
Not. Yeah, they come out as deceiving, but they don't. You can't get pinned for lying.
Right. That's how I'm gonna be in court if I'm gonna go to court.
So that leads on to about what was. It was about, like, how germs get killed in a matter of seconds, but the report is never complete because you never know, like, if, let's say you have a cold, which was what the chapter was speaking of, and you don't know what germ, or if it is a germ, as it said on the book, is what's causing the cold. Like, you get a cold and that's it, and then you find remedies for it. But then they said that they measured an amount, that they killed an amount of germs in 11 seconds, and I feel as though it's impossible. Or not impossible, but, like, not very likely to be able to measure how you can extend germs in a matter of seconds, because you don't know how many germs, or if they were germs at all. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can't measure a germ. And, like, how can you, if you can't measure a germ, really, how can you measure the amount of seconds it takes to, like, eliminate them? So, like, that's why, like, that statistically, that's not, it goes well with statistics, because if statistics is a lie, then it does go well. But if it's not, it's not complete, then, like, what data are we going off from? Like, there's not a complete source and stuff like that. And then also, the other chapter was speaking of how non-smokers get better grades than smokers because of the amount of, what happens to their brains? Like, when you smoke, what happens to your brain? Like, okay, so when you smoke, your brain,
kills brain cells.
But how do you exactly know how many cells you need to have in order to do well in college and stuff like that?
And I feel like with things like that, like topics that are so vague, like people that smoke, people that don't smoke, but there's so many other things that go into that. There's no way to have like a 100% controlled sample. Like if they were to take, like say if they were to take high schoolers and they were just like 10th graders, like they just want to take a sample of 10th grade kids from SLA. I'm like, okay, let's get 5 kids that don't smoke and 5 kids that do smoke. And then like, let's see who gets better grades. But then like, I could like, no, not me, I'm not 10th grade, but somebody in 10th grade, like one of the 10th graders that do smoke could like be a great student, always been a great student. Yeah. And then you could have one that's just not, like, just don't care about life, don't care about school. And then you could have, but you could also have people that don't smoke that don't care about life and don't care about school.
Right, it depends on like what environment they are in, once again.
Right, or you could have 5 kids that smoke and you just so happen to pick the 5 smokers that don't care about life. And right. Then you could just so happen to pick the 5 non-smokers that just want to do well in school, and then come to the conclusion that, oh, people that smoke just don't care about life, but that's not true. Mm-hmm. Or don't do well in school or whatever. I feel like a lot of things like that, a lot of tests or a lot of statistics like that, like people who, like, I don't know another one, but like the stuff like that. Like, people who smoke do better, or like the one in history that we did, like people who went to kindergarten. I mean,
from the did better in high school.
Yeah, does better, but like I feel like you can't. Like, there's so many other things that factor into that. Like, okay, you went to preschool, but where did you go to school after that?
Yeah.
But like, who did you hang out with? Or what's your family situation like? Or what?
Yeah.
What family problems do you have? What's your parents' income looking like? Like, there's so many different factors that play into that. That like, you could say like, based off of what your results are. Like, if you're just basing off of a test or like grades. And yeah, they do better, but why do they do better? Stuff like that, or like, what's affecting? What's making this effect? I feel like only way that statistics can be successful in that way. I feel like the only way that statistics can be successful in that way is if you're taking the things that the results that you get, and you're like trying to make an improvement off of it. So like, say if they're trying to say like people that smoke do better, don't do as well as people that don't smoke. Then, like, if you're going to make a general statement like that, I feel like you should only use it if you're trying to get people to stop smoking.
Right.
Not just to, like, I don't know. I feel like things like that should have a purpose. Right. Like, something like people who go to preschool do better than kids who don't. Like, what are you trying to do? Like, get people to all go to preschool?
Like, you know the commercial on MTV where it'd be like, the girl, I only bring this up. It's like the old lady, she got that thing on her neck.
Oh, yeah, and she has a...
But they made it seem like, based off the commercial, they made it seem like if you smoke, this will happen to you.
I mean,
there's a chance.
It depends on how much you smoke and all that stuff. I mean, like, smoking is just bad, straight up. Like, there's nothing positive that comes from smoking.
I hate that commercial, though.
So, they're just trying to show you, like,
what's happening. They're trying to scare you with stuff like
just
that.
Like when they show, like, those above the influence commercials or, like, like, they show you, like, what can, or, you know what I'm talking about, like, hypothetical things that could possibly happen to you. It doesn't mean it's going to.
Yeah.
Just well, so you can be aware of, like, different consequences.
We were talking about that earlier when I was, like, 1 in 4 females get raped in college. Like, that, it's not saying everybody gonna get raped, but...
If you got 4 friends that... And that's another thing, like, if that's the statistic, is it not? 1 in 4girls get raped in college. But, like, who are these 1 in 4? How many,
like
what
are
your sample? What school is it? Where are these girls coming from?
I'm
where
guessing
are they
that
going
because...
when they get raped? What's considered rape? Like, I'm sorry. I'm just saying, like, those statements are just so broad. Like, how can you just make... I just... I don't know.
Because you don't know what rape could be. Sexual harassment could have been...
Okay, or, like, where they are or how many of them actually got raped. Like,
I
watched a lot of TV and I've seen a lot of things where, like, girls get caught having sex and they just call it rape because they don't want to, like, look like anything else.
Or and like, also it depends, like, how many people, because once again, somebody said, like, in a group of friends, like, you're in a group of friends that are 4 people, you're one of the 4 people, and obviously nobody from your friends group got raped. They don't only test you, they test, like, 100 people that go to college. And then it's just
that
so
means that out of that 100 people, that means out of that 100 people, that 25 of them just needed to get raped. But I'm saying that, like, who are these 100
that's
people that they're taking?
Where
like, it all depends on your sample, like, who you're taking.
Like, if you was in, like, Wisconsin or something like that, they don't have barely a lot of people there.
Or what if you took, like...
You're telling me, out of 100 people, 25 people got raped?
Not throwing no shade, but what if you picked... What if out of your 100 people, or, like, your 1 in 4, what if you picked, like, 1, 2, 3 good people, and then a 4th girl that...
Okay.
That is known to not be doing great.
You know what I'm trying to say.
Okay, I get you. We just ain't want to say it.
And like, that's all. I'm sorry, I got a little topic.
We went on a tangent right now, Mr. Miles. But I hope you liked our interview. Oh, well, not our interview, our podcast, because this is 21 minutes long. So.
Just know that this whole stats thing really got me thinking.
It got all of us thinking.
Yeah,
about
all these different like.
Probabilities and if it's true or not.
Yeah.
Everything suspect to me.
Nothing.
I'm not gonna be able to watch TV the same, Mr. Miles.
Or like, I'm gonna start questioning. And like, I'm gonna start calling companies. Like, excuse me, who'd you sample? Like,
all right, you got it.
I'm like, well, what was your sample size? How many people did you test? Where did they come from?
Who, what, where, when,
or like, one out of every 10 Americans. AIDS or something like that. Like, who are these?
Where
they come from? Like, at the states that have the most AIDS people.
Like, I'm just saying, like, there's so many, like, what
different
if,
combinations.
What if they took, like, what if they came up with an AIDS campaign that said 1 out of 10 Americans, but they went to, like, a place, okay, so Philly is, like, really high with AIDS or whatever. Like, it's one of the most
populated
place with AIDS or something like that. But then also because Philadelphia has a lot more people, like isn't it like there's more people in Philadelphia like than there is in the whole state or something like that? I think that's what it is. Like there's more people in Philadelphia than there is in the whole state. So like in an election, if they win in Philadelphia, then they most likely
won electoral vote. Likely.
For the whole state. But yeah, like what if they take it from somewhere like Philly where there's a lot of people with AIDS, so they say, and then they come up with 1 out of every 10 that they check has AIDS, but in reality it's because of where they did it. Like if they would have went somewhere where not a lot of people had AIDS and nobody had AIDS, it was like 1 out of every 40 people had AIDS. Like it really all depends on your sample, where people are coming from, all that kind of stuff. I don't know
why they do these surveys. Like
yeah. Just to make, I feel like they do it just to make you like more
aware,
or like make you feel like you need to, like basically they're trying to tell you 1 out of every 10, and you're like, dang, I know 10 people, and what if I'm that one? And so basically they're like trying to make you get tested, protect yourself, stuff like that. But I feel like it can be very misleading, but it gets their point across, which is, I guess, the ultimate goal.
Right.
That's, you know what, so that's with what that being made me upset.
So with that being said, I think that as a group we believe that statistics is not a lie, but at the same time is not a complete truth.
So I feel as though that if you're going to use statistics to be deceitful, that you need to use it for a purpose, like an overarching purpose. Like if you're trying to say, like there's no point of saying people who go to preschool do better than people who don't, but there's a purpose of saying like 1 out of every 10 people in America has AIDS.
You're
gonna want to get tested. Yeah. All right. But nobody care about preschool. I didn't go to preschool, and.
We're gonna cut
that off.
Right. Okay.
All
right.
Bye,
Marcel. Bye.
Have fun.
Hey, Mr. Miles. It's Marina, Sierra, Priscilla, Podcast 3.
So for this podcast, we just want to talk about different topics that we read throughout the book that we found interesting that we want to bring up right now as a closing to all of our podcasts.
In the beginning of the book, it was like there was a section that it was about race and how people can do better in you expect them to do better in college, but then when they come out, they don't really have a lot of money and they have to lie and stories about the amount of money they get. And then later on in the book, they talk about how the people of the white race talk about answer the questions like. That they either be modest about their wage because other people, like compared to black people, they don't want black people to know how much like they get or something like that. And they also talk about like lunch breaks and between black and whites and how black people have less time for lunch breaks and that. And statistically, I don't know if that's correct or not because of the fact that nobody, like there's not specifically anybody really timing these breaks and stuff like that, or like in every company. And so why be modest about like what your wage is just because other people's wages are not the same because of their different race and stuff like that. So
something that I found interesting in the book was I knew that statistics could be misleading, but not really. Like whenever I hear a statistic, I always, or like watch it on TV or something, I always think like, automatically I just think like, wow, that's a big, I don't know how to word it. You don't try to
that's
say.
That's a harsh fact.
Yeah, like, today in the Mutter Museum when there was like, Philadelphia has the highest rate of people who engage in risky behavior. But according to who, like according to what, where are they getting these people from? Like, I'm still stuck on that. Where are they getting these people from? Who are they sampling? What are their sample sizes? How do we know that, like, they didn't just take, like, 10 people from Philly and then, like, 100 people from Los Angeles? Like, that'll all change
your data.
So I was just saying, like, so from the book, like, if before I read the book, I wouldn't have even questioned that. Like, I just been like, wow, that's a lot. But now after reading the book, like, it makes me want to question all the statistics that I hear or, like, read about and, like, wonder what their sample size was or... Where this took place or who they surveyed, stuff like that. Like now I have a better
I'm less likely to be misled.
Oh, I was going to say earlier that your environment can affect your data. Like, going back to the teens, the high school teens in Philadelphia, and how the HIV rate and all of the venereal diseases is high, I wanted to think, like, in certain areas like North Philly compared to West Philly, compared to Southwest, and how teens from different neighborhoods may have be exposed to these diseases more than others. So, like, I don't know how they took, like, how they got a general idea of what teens are exposed to these diseases and how they conducted their data. That's all I thought was interesting from that.
True, true. Well, that's the end of our podcast.
Bye, Mr. Miles.
Bye. Bye.